Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back into the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and we are done with Week 9, looking ahead to Week 10. There's a lot that we got coming up. You know, this is that November 3rd, USC, Oregon, LSU, Bama, but we got a lot more than just those two games. And arguably, you know, they are not even necessarily the center of all the attention moving forward. And so to look back at Week 9 and give it a little Week 9 rewind, I'd like welcome back to the podcast, as always, Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, what was your just sort of general feeling and the joy that you're going to have trolling Oregon fans just sort of for the rest of Sunday, Monday, and the rest of the week?
So I see you've been paying attention to Twitter tonight. I mean, Oregon's a very good team, but I just don't see how you can make the argument that they deserve to be higher than fourth right now, because they don't have the resume that Notre Dame now has, especially after beating Oklahoma, or Kansas State has, another team that's beaten Oklahoma, and other good teams. I mean, Oregon's best team is either Arizona or Arizona State, and Arizona beat USC this week, but Arizona's still a 4-3 team, and Arizona State's looked pretty bad the last 2 weeks, so unless Oregon's going to tell me that their win over Arkansas State is a BCS-busting type of game, you just can't. Well, they might be there at the end. In fact, if Oregon does win out, Oregon does deserve to be ahead of both Kansas State and Notre Dame. But right now, you can't make the argument without being completely biased about it.
Right, and there's a little bit of value to the argument, or there's a lot of value to the argument that it really shouldn't matter, because they do deserve to be number four right now, but we're not choosing the two teams to compete for the national championship right now. They will be playing on the final week of the season as long as they win their division. And frankly, yes, they probably are being hurt a little bit, because all of those Pac-12 teams, Arizona State hasn't looked great, but if Marcus Wheaton and Puroy can't play for Oregon State this coming weekend, we already see that Mannion threw four picks. Arizona State could beat Oregon State, making that, you know, everybody thought the Civil War was going to boost Oregon's resume. It's possible that if they take care of business, they're not going to have a lot of these impressive wins because everybody else in the Pac-12 is so inconsistent.
Yeah, Oregon, I was thinking the same thing about the Oregon State game. By the time that game gets here at the end of November or early December, Oregon State, you know, might not even be ranked at that point, because Oregon State, to me, has been that one team all year that's been undefeated, but it's been that undefeated team where you weren't really buying into it completely. It's just like they keep winning, but as I was watching it, I really wasn't sure why. And now, after losing this week, I wouldn't be surprised, especially with the problems we saw with Mannion and then going to Vaz. So now there's the quarterback controversy. So now there's just distractions around the team. I wouldn't be surprised if Oregon State, you know, loses two in a row or three in a row before that game and is out of the top 25 before it happens.
Now, I used to have Notre Dame pinned as one of my teams where they keep winning and it's ugly, and you go back to the Michigan State game or the Michigan game where there were, what, like six turnovers in almost successive plays. What, in your opinion, has really changed? Because the Oklahoma win was huge. They were 10.5-point dogs. They were playing against Bob Stoops in Norman. They go in there. I know that you said this when we were chatting in Campfire during the games. You said Brian Kelly has called one hell of a game. It's a lot of credit to Brian Kelly, a lot of credit to Everett Golson. But is it just them? What have you seen, just sort of taking a step back beyond just the Oklahoma game, that makes them worthy of being that number three team in the nation?
I honestly think, I mean, we've known all year that Notre Dame's defense is pretty good, but what I think that last night proved more than anything about that defense is that it's up there with the Alabama defense. You know, it's that good. That team went to Oklahoma in Norman and held a team that's been averaging 44 points a game to 13 points at home. Oklahoma, I think they had four red zone opportunities and only came away with 13 points. They held the Sooners to 15 yards rushing. The Belldozer finally got into the end zone, but it didn't count, although Oklahoma would finally be the first team to score rush. But that defense Would you? It's up there with Alabama, and I think, you know, when you talk about the two teams, Alabama's got a better offense than Notre Dame, but on the defensive side of the ball, I think they're very much equals right now, because that secondary, you thought it, I thought it, most people thought Oklahoma was going to tear that secondary apart. And in the first quarter, at the beginning of the game, it kind of looked like they did because Notre Dame was playing such soft coverage. But as that game went on, the Notre Dame secondary was not a problem. Oklahoma couldn't move consistently. They'd get a play here and there and move down the field. Once the field got smaller, there were no problems in that secondary being able to stop those receivers. And Oklahoma's got a lot of receivers. So I think, I mean, like you said, Kelly and Golson had good goal. Kelly had a great game. I mean, that might be one of the best play calling sequences I've seen from a coach in a long time. And Golson's numbers weren't pretty, but what he did that was so important was he's had problems with turnovers all year, but he goes on the road and what's easily, you know, the toughest situation he's been in. He's only a redshirt freshman. He's never been on the road in an atmosphere like this. And he didn't try to force anything. When there was nothing there, he either threw the ball away or just took off to try to get as many yards with his legs as he could. A lot of freshmen, young quarterbacks like that, in those situations, are going to try to make plays that aren't there happen. He did not do that. And I think even though the numbers weren't as impressive as some of the games he's had, because of that, I think that was Golson's most impressive game of the year.
Do you think that he has taken over sole control of that starter's role and we are done seeing sort of the, you know, we joke around, but the baseball, the middle reliever, the closer of Tommy Rees or anything like that?
I still think we're going to see Tommy Rees at some point, just because if Notre Dame does get down, I think Rees is better equipped to lead a comeback on offense than Golson is, just because I think Rees is the better passer. But I do think that what Golson did this week is he probably got a little more faith from Brian Kelly in those situations. I think Kelly might wait a little longer to pull the trigger if he's thinking about it, whereas now if previously be like, okay, he threw a bad interception, I'm going to get him out of there and put Rees in. I think now he's going to get a little more slack, but I don't think we've seen the last of Tommy Rees, though.
Now, Notre Dame gets to move up with Florida's loss. We will get to the cocktail party in a little bit. But Kansas State, in a game that early in the day, we were looking at it in the afternoon, and Texas Tech came out and really just, they came out there and they fought. It was sort of they were exchanging blows, and then the Wildcats just blew it open. It ended up being a 52-7 run over 35 minutes, and it was the fifth time this season that Kansas State has eclipsed 50 points. With John Hubert running the ball, obviously Colin Klein, he had two touchdowns on the ground, two touchdowns through the air. This team, it's another one where you might have said, oh, I don't know how they're winning, but Texas Tech is a very, very good team. They came out and they gave them their best first blow that they could get. And in my opinion, that is, in a college football season, you're going to be tested. You're going to come out and someone is going to give you their best shot. And to see Kansas State not only withstand that first blow, but bounce back the way they did, it put a lot more faith in picking them to possibly be able to win this Big 12. But a lot of tests left. Do you think they can do it?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think they can, because it's Colin Klein is what's getting most of the attention, but he's definitely not the only thing on that team that's worthy of attention. I mean, Arthur Brown and that defense are really, really good. And, I mean, if you just look at the final score of this game, you see it's 55-24. You're sitting there thinking, ah, Texas Tech's just overrated, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this was, like you're saying, this is a 13-10 game at halftime. And then Kansas State just came out in the second half and steamrolled the Red Raiders. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that, I mean, Kansas State, they're not as talented as other teams, just if you look at it from recruiting, you know, three stars compared to teams with five-star players. But what they have, besides Colin Klein and the strong defense, is this is like such coach speak, but they really don't beat themselves at all. They don't commit a lot of penalties. They don't turn the ball over. And if you look at what the real factor was in that game yesterday with Texas Tech, the Raiders turned the ball over three times. Kansas State didn't do it a single time, and every time that Texas Tech did turn the ball over, Kansas State turned it into points. And when it, in a 31-point game, those three turnovers, that's a huge factor in the outcome of that game. But if you look at the rest of Kansas State's schedule, I don't see a team on there or a game in there in which the Wildcats aren't favored. Oklahoma State's looked good the last few weeks, but I don't really think they're going to be able to beat Kansas State. TCU and Baylor on the road, I mean, Baylor can put up points, but Baylor has looked pretty mediocre offensively when they've played good defenses. And then finishing the year against Texas, is anybody really scared of Texas anymore at this point?
Yeah.
So I don't see anything stopping Kansas State at this point, because it's a team that doesn't beat itself, and none of the four teams left on the schedule, I think, are capable of beating them.
Right. And there is, and who knows, you know, I don't want to, as much as I criticize people that try and pick everything out, all we're simply saying is, it is lining up so that Kansas State could be able to do this. And that would be fascinating to watch Colin Klein. And for all the hype that we give Kirby Smart and Nick Saban for being able to, you know, spend a month preparing for a team, I think that Bill Snyder and that the rest of that Kansas State staff, given enough time, they would be able to come out with a couple wrinkles of their own. And all that, along with all of these matchups here in those top four teams, would just be fascinating right now. I almost wish we could play them off now instead of having to do the playoff in 2 years.
Well, you know, I mean, I want to start off by saying we're guilty of this just as much as anybody. As far as a Kansas State-Alabama title game would be, we're all just assuming Alabama's not going to lose, aren't we?
Right.
I mean, and Alabama's playing. Alabama might lose this week. It's LSU's not going to be a pushover. But if Alabama and Kansas State did get to the title game, one thing I've been thinking about lately is the one team that really has given Alabama defenses trouble in the last few years since Saban's been there and that team's been a juggernaut was Florida under Urban Meyer and with Tim Tebow. And it was because Alabama couldn't really stop Tebow. Who's the one player in college football right now most like Tim Tebow?
Yeah, it's Colin Klein.
Exactly. So I'm interested to see if Kansas State would basically follow the same formula that Florida had. I think Florida's defenses for those title teams were a little better than Kansas State's, but still, I think Colin Klein and Kansas State could score against Alabama. And, I mean, get to 20-something, which might be enough to do it.
Oh, man, that game would be awesome. That game would be awesome. All right, well...
I agree.
Kansas State and Notre Dame, of course, move up because Florida loses. The Gators turn the ball over 6 times. And again, that was just one too many turnovers for another underwhelming offensive performance. The defense does their job for the most part. They held Georgia to just 1 of 10 on third downs, 273 total yards of offense. But the Gators just cannot get anything done and end up sort of losing. They had control of the SEC East. They were sitting at number 2 in the BCS standings. And in one ugly game that was as much a criticism of both quarterbacks, Aaron Murray threw 3 interceptions, Jeff Driskel threw 2. I was not incredibly thrilled watching the game. I found myself flipping around a lot. I don't know if I can call this one necessarily a classic SEC defensive battle, but at the end of it, Georgia is sitting here looking pretty nice to return to Atlanta for the SEC championship game.
Yeah, this was not a classic SEC defensive battle. I mean, this was just bad football.
Yeah,
like
ugly.
Last year, if you look at the Alabama LSU game last year, the first one, there were missed field goals in it that made it ugly. And a lot of people will tell you that was just bad football. That was really good defense. Neither offense was able to do anything because both the Alabama and LSU defenses weren't letting it. This game yesterday was just bad football. Like you were talking about the turnovers. There were 9 turnovers between the two teams, and there were 24 penalties. It was just a terrible, ugly game that you needed to be drinking in the parking lot for hours before going inside to be able to sit there and watch the entire thing. It was just Georgia gets the bump for beating Florida, but I mean, this isn't really a win that I think we could sit there and say, well, you know, Georgia might just be, you know, they might just be the best team in the SEC East. No, because they did turn the ball over 3 times themselves, and this is the same team that got beat up by South Carolina. I just think this was a game between 2 teams playing terribly that Georgia played a little better in. I'm not taking it all that seriously because Florida lost it.
Yeah, I think Jerry put it really nicely in his BCS reaction contribution on tonight or Sunday night is when we're recording this. And he said, has any team done more for themselves in the big picture with 60 minutes than what Georgia did? If you think about what people thought of the Bulldogs, what the Bulldogs' best case scenario in the season was before the game and after the game are like night and day, because now, because South Carolina has two losses, they don't have Lattimore, and they've got to take care of Ole Miss, which will be a challenge, though they get them at home. Then they go play at Auburn. If Georgia wins those two games, they're back in the SEC championship. We've already seen them back in the BCS. They're like at six, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they're at number six in the BCS standings, which means they've almost got a guaranteed shot to beat either Alabama or LSU, whoever wins the West. And Georgia almost beat LSU last year. I mean, this is a team that has not had a lot of wins that I'm blown away with. And the Florida win was another one. And I don't know. It almost deflates me to think that the Bulldogs are going to be the team that emerge from that division with the season they've had.
Yeah, Georgia, that the SEC title game was close last year, but I mean, LSU kind of took that one over still in the second half. But I think that this year, let's just say if Georgia did go to the SEC title game this year and faced Alabama, I think Alabama will crush Georgia, whereas I think if it was Florida in that game, that'd be a competitive game. I still think Alabama wins, but I think it'd be a much more competitive game, whereas I just don't see this Georgia team being good enough to really win the SEC. And I think Georgia fans know that, too, because there's nothing about that win where you're going home saying, woo, you know, it's like you're happy you beat Florida, but there's nothing about that win you're happy with besides the fact that you beat Florida. That's it.
Yeah. No, but, you know, that's one of those things about the SEC. You never know about your schedule, your draw, and this is the second year in a row that the Bulldogs, it appears. I mean, again, Ole Miss has been playing some ball. Hugh Freeze has got those boys winning some games, and if they could pull the upset, then the SEC East gets crazy again. But as it stands, sure looks like the Bulldogs are headed back to Atlanta.
I agree.
Headed into the Big Ten territory, I want to tell you that on my notepad beside Ohio State, Penn State, my one line of reaction just says Braxton Miller is an alien cyborg. Will you please elaborate on Ohio State's performance in a very, very big win over Penn State?
Braxton Miller is so good at football.
I know.
I put the GIF of it on the site yesterday, that his 1 yard touchdown run where he literally like, When Matt Hinton saw the video, he thought it was like a glitch in the video, and it's like, no, he really did that.
Yeah,
that was his juke. That was like, it was like he literally broke the space-time continuum to move back a yard and then move forward. And there was a blatant hold on Michael Mowdy on that play, but I think the move that Miller put on was just so amazing that the referees didn't even see the hold because they were too busy with their jaws dropped. But Braxton Miller is by far and away the best thing on Ohio State, and he's far and away the best thing in the Big Ten. And even though Ohio State is intelligible, I wish we could rank Braxton Miller, because I think he would be about 19th in the BCS just by himself.
I think that Braxton Miller, actually, Sagarin does favor him a little bit over most ACC teams. You know, it's just a computer poll. But, you know, we've said he is at times a one-man offense. He bounces back from getting shaken up last week, comes back, and in a couple of dazzling runs really helps jumpstart that Buckeyes offense. They get back in and take control of the game, cruise to a victory. If Ohio State keeps this going, and I'm sure Chris Houston will be weighing in on this week, but you've got to think that Braxton Miller's sitting there looking at a possible invitation to New York City for the Heisman. I mean, this is the beginning of what hopefully will be a very, very perfect union for Urban Meyer and Braxton Miller, but a great college career for Miller.
Yeah, I don't see how you could realistically say there are five players in college football that are better than he is right now. But I think the one thing that would hurt him in the Heisman, I mean, this is more Chris's thing, but I think the one thing that would hurt him in the Heisman is his stats for some games aren't great. So for people that weren't actually watching the games, they're going to see that and be like, you know, he had a mediocre day. And while his stats weren't great in those games, it was the plays that he made at the certain key points that won those games for Ohio State. He's just, he didn't like that team. he is the reason Ohio State is 9-0, because that defense has holes, it has flaws. The offense, the running backs, Carlos Hyde and Jordan Hall have been in and out of the lineup with injuries, although Carlos Hyde's been really good the last few weeks. But he is the one constant, and even in his bad games, he's making the plays to win games.
We'll cycle back to the Pac-12. We hit on Oregon a little bit earlier, and while you can criticize their schedule, you can say they haven't played anybody. One, they did go up against Arizona and blank them 49-0, and I believe they picked off Matt Scott five times. Twice they returned it for a touchdown. And I'm starting to revisit that game, especially now looking at what Matt Scott did against Southern California, giving them their second conference loss. And even though the Wildcats, they've got three conference losses, but the Pac-12 South is wide open. Is Arizona's victory over Southern California more Southern Cal's losing, or is that showing that Arizona, with Rich Rod at the helm, with Kadeem Carey especially, but also just like Matt Scott and that up-tempo offense, does that win either help legitimize Oregon, or is this a different Wildcats team from when they played them earlier in the year?
I think this is an Arizona team that's actually just good and been good all year and just got his butt kicked by Oregon. I think there's just such a huge difference between Oregon and the rest of that conference. USC's loss only makes that clear, is that Oregon is far and away the best team in that conference. But as far as Arizona's concerned, I mean, they have the three losses in the conference, yes, but besides that Oregon loss, they lost by 3 points to Oregon State, and they lost to Stanford at Stanford in overtime. So it's not like Arizona's been getting blown out by anybody besides the Ducks. It's a good team. And I'm not shocked they beat USC, because USC has not been a very good team outside of L.A. this year. The game in New Jersey against Syracuse was a lot closer than it should have been, considering it's Syracuse. And the loss at Stanford on the road, and then the loss against Arizona here on the road. It's just they're not the same team outside of L.A.
So who wins that Pac-12 South? Do you think they still cruise? I mean, you've got UCLA and Arizona State both have two conference losses. I'd say maybe Arizona State has the edge there. I don't know. Oh, Pac-12 South is just an odd bunch. It's not a crew you want to be hanging out with late at night. That's for sure.
I still think USC is the favorite, but I think it is going to come down to that USC-UCLA game to finish the year. I think the winner of that game is going to be going to Eugene to play Oregon. I mean, I like Arizona State, but I think that team's kind of been exposed a little bit. Like, its flaws are showing the last 2 weeks. Oregon showed them to the world, and then they saw them again this weekend in another loss. So I don't think Arizona State has what it takes to overcome both UCLA and USC, especially considering UCLA now has the tiebreaker on it. But I do. I think it's going to come down to the Bruins-Trojans game, and the winner of that game is facing Oregon.
Staying another big matchup with division race implications over the weekend was Nebraska's 23-9 victory against Michigan. Once again, like you have said on so many weekend picks panels, this Nebraska team's just very, very different at home and on the road, particularly Martinez. And now Nebraska, with the win over Michigan, has the head-to-head advantage. However, they've got Penn State and Michigan State, Minnesota, and Iowa left. Who are you giving the edge to right now in the Legends division, as they will battle to see who gets to face Wisconsin or Indiana?
Or Indiana.
Yeah.
I think you have to go to Nebraska. I mean, they have it just because of the tiebreaker, because Nebraska's got the tough game next week on the road against Michigan State. That's a game I could totally see Nebraska losing against, that not being a surprise. But I still think Nebraska wins it. I think they could beat Penn State at home. I'm pretty sure they beat Minnesota at home. And then a road trip to Iowa. Iowa might have nothing left to play for come that game at the end of the year. And Michigan has a road trip to Minnesota, which it should lose, but it's got a tough game against Northwestern. It plays Iowa, but then it has to finish the year at Ohio State. So I think that Michigan basically already has another conference loss on its record right now, because I don't see this Wolverines team going on the road to beat Ohio State to finish the year, particularly if Ohio State's still playing for an undefeated season, and I think they will be. So I'm giving Nebraska the edge, and also because, as we saw this weekend, Denard Robinson got hurt. It's an elbow injury. They expect him to play, but he gets hurt pretty often, and it was very painfully obvious on Saturday night that when Robinson leaves a game like he had to, and Russell Bellamy came in to replace him, that Michigan offense can do nothing without Robinson. And not, it has gone two games now without scoring a touchdown.
Would they try Devin Gardner? Did they? I haven't gotten a chance.
No, Devin Gardner, he technically was, but they kept him at wide receiver last night, and they brought in third string Russell Bellamy to play quarterback. And it was, I don't want to be mean to the kid because he's a college kid, but he was not good at playing last night. He started out 0-for-10 before he completed his first pass, and he finished tonight 3-for-16 for 38 yards with 3 interceptions. So he completed as many passes to Nebraska as he did to his own team.
That's your stat of the night. That right there. Bellamy completed as many passes to his own teammates as he did to the opposition. That is no way to win football games.
You're not going to win a lot of games doing that.
No, not at all. Real quickly, we haven't gotten a chance to mention Alabama. So what from the Mississippi State game stood out to you? And then, of course, looking ahead, you know, they had Mississippi State. LSU had the week off. Even though Mississippi State was a good opponent for Alabama, certainly don't think that they took anything away from the Tide, especially heading into this big road trip down to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, that game really didn't go any differently than I expected. I thought Mississippi State could keep Alabama's score a little lower. I thought Mississippi State could cover, but I didn't see them scoring more than 7 points. But, that game really just kind of confirmed what I thought about Mississippi State and the fact that it's a good team with a good defense, but it hadn't really played anybody amazing yet. And then it got a hold of Alabama last night, and Alabama did exactly what you'd expect them to do to them.
Yeah, just picked him apart. All right, we are going to wrap it up with the Week 9 Honor Roll, and I know one of Mr. Fornelli's nominations, but not all of them. So go ahead and give your first nomination for the Honor Roll.
Well, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, my coach of the week for the Honor Roll would be Brian Kelly, because that was, as far as the few years that he's been at Notre Dame, I think that was easily his best game as far as his play calling goes. I think that team was really obviously prepared for what was in store, and it met the expectations. It exceeded the expectations. It was a mistake-free game. The flow of the play calling was perfect. It kept Oklahoma's defense off balance just about the entire night. So I don't see how you can give it to any other coach besides Kelly. As far as the other positions, I'd go Colin Klein because he's awesome again. You know, it's the first time in a while, you know, that we've had a Heisman favorite continue to play well, because Geno Smith was our Heisman favorite, and then he just had a couple bad games in a row.
And Denard Robinson before that. It was Denard Robinson and Matt Barkley heading into the year. Remember, we had the two of them, and everybody was chasing them.
Yeah, everybody's kind of just been disappointing for Heisman candidates so far this year. Colin Klein is just kind of sitting there like, yeah, no, not going to happen. I'm still going to be, you know, Optimus Klein. Then I have to look at that Arizona-USC game for Marquise Lee and Austin Hill, who together combined for 604 receiving yards. Now, as amazing as that stat is for two receivers in one game to combine for that many yards, it's the fact that they only scored 2 touchdowns, and Marquise Lee scored both of them. Austin Hill had 259 receiving yards and did not find the end zone for any of them. And that to me is amazing. And then I also want to go a little shout out, you know, lesser known players, a Central Michigan running back who has a fantastic name, Zerlin Tipton, who rushed for 243 yards and 3 touchdowns in a 35-14 win over Akron. Got to give the Mac some love, because as you wrote yesterday, the Mac has 6 teams who are already bowl eligible. Compare that to the Big Ten, which you can't count Ohio State. There are only 3 bowl eligible teams.
It really is amazing. And I think that it's just one of those years, you know, this happens every couple of years. The MAC rises up, and it's a combination of, you know, some good coaching, enough of the teams getting hot at the right times, and it's been a really, really fun year for that conference so far.
Yeah, and every week that passes by, I get more and more confused how Northern Illinois lost to Iowa to start the season, because I feel like Northern Illinois should be 9-0 and be like that BCS buster possibility right now.
It's been entirely different since that. And I'd forgotten that when I sat down to sort of, you know, it took about a few minutes away from the rush of game day and just try and soak in. Like, okay, so how did all these teams get here? And I go back to that Northern Illinois-Iowa game. It was overtime, right?
No, I don't think it was. I think Iowa, if I remember correctly, I mean, Northern Illinois led just about the entire game, and Iowa scored late in the fourth quarter to take its first lead and win the game.
Jeez.
Like, I think there was maybe 90 seconds left in that game.
Jesus. All right, my nominations for the honor roll. First one, going to travel all the way back to Thursday night, way back then, where Sammy Watkins, who did not have a touchdown coming into the game, he was the ACC preseason player of the year, sets a Clemson school record with 222 yards receiving against Wake Forest, as Clemson, who was 1-9 in Thursday night ESPN games heading in, trounces the Demon Deacons 42-13. And then also Boise State running back DJ Harper. The Broncos are sliding up a lot of the polls. They're starting to move up. And as, you know, Ohio loses, as the undefeateds continue to fall, one loss Boise State, they're sort of aiming for that top 16, possibly getting an at-large BCS bid. And I think that one of the big reasons they've been able to do it has been DJ Harper. He runs for 105 yards, two touchdowns. He's got touchdowns in five of his last seven games and five 100-yard games on the season. I saw the Broncos. I wanted to specifically point him out because on your selection committee ballot on Monday, we all turn in our top 15, similar to the selection committee that we will have in 2014. You've got the Broncos right up there right now.
Yes, I do. You know, they lost to Michigan State to open the season, which doesn't look as impressive as it did then, but they've played well since then, and they keep beating everybody's in front of them. I don't think they're as good as the Boise State teams we've seen in the past, but it's still a good team, and I think they deserve to be in the top 15, yeah.
Yeah, they certainly do. Well, thanks so much. We hope you enjoyed Week 9. This puts a wrap on the Week 9 Rewind. And we will look forward to bringing you tons of content this week on CBSSports.com, especially in preparation for our big weekend on Saturday. So be sure. Remember, we'll be a doubleheader on CBS. That LSU-Alabama game will kick off with Vern, Gary, and Tracy at 8 o'clock. Under the lights in Death Valley. So we'll be talking about it all through the week on the podcast as well as on the site. So be sure to keep it here at CBSSports.com for all the latest. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for tuning in.